Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 79th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloney, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Happy New Year to everybody. It's 2015. Look forward to a long, prosperous year of interviews with great educators and people making a difference across the education industry.
We hope that as you listen to this week's episode, that you tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversations and hearing about the different things that stick out to you from our guests. This week, we are really excited to get to talk to Stephen Anderson. He's kind of a jack-of-all-trades in education, co-founder of the hashtag EdChat, an avid blogger, speaker, educator, ASCD emerging leader, and also one of the top 50 innovators in education. So thank you, Stephen, for coming on with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Stephen, one of the first places we always like to start with our guests is kind of hearing a little bit about their journey and how they got into education. So what's your path?
I knew from a very, very young age I was going to be a teacher. Which is interesting because there aren't any teachers in my family, but I knew from about middle school on that I wanted to be some sort of teacher. And when I went to college, I was very into marching band. I was a big musician. I played the tuba and the sousaphone and thought, you know what, I'm going to go be a high school band director, because that was my favorite teacher was a high school band director. And so my path led me to a different place. And so I said, you know what, about 2 years into college, I said, you know what, maybe music isn't the right place where I need to be. Kindergarten is where I'm going to be. I'm going to go be a kindergarten teacher. One day in a kindergarten classroom and said, nope, there are much better people suited for elementary school than me. So sure, I still wanted to be a teacher, still wanted to be in education, and landed in middle school and fell in love with teaching middle school. And so I graduated and taught middle school for a number of years, middle school math and science. And throughout my journey there, I did some work with technology, and I found that, you know, there was a Promethean board in our school that no one was using. And I, you know, asked the media person, you know, what is this thing? And she's like, I have no idea. It was here when I got here. I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll go figure it out. And, you know, I started using technology in my classroom when nobody else was doing it in my building, and found kind of how cool it was, and found myself doing and leading impromptu technology sessions for my teachers. And when I found out there was a degree for it, well, I went back to school and got it, and that led me to having several different positions at the district level, ultimately with a director of instructional technology for a large district in North Carolina. And back in April, I recently left and get to do cool things. Like this week, I'm in a hotel room right now because I'm in Virginia Beach at the VISTE conference. I get to so a lot of cool opportunities to travel around and talk to teachers and educators and principals and superintendents about the power that technology can have on learning and leadership.
Okay, so one question I have to ask that I've always wondered, have the bow ties always been a part of the dress, or did you grow into that?
I grew into that. I always like to do things differently. I always like to be different. And so I, people who know me for a long time know that I used to have crazy socks, and I've got a collection of about 250 socks that are right now are gathering dust because I've given up socks altogether, and all I do is wear crazy Tom shoes now. So because I find they're just really comfortable to present in. So I've got every color under the sun. I've got hand painted that I actually have with me that I'm going to wear while I'm here. But it's just something different. The bow ties are just something different.
That's cool. When did you know you were ready to kind of step outside the classroom and to get into something else, and kind of just talk through the pros and cons of that you had to go through to make that decision?
It wasn't easy. I knew that when I found that I could, that my teachers were really responsive to me kind of leading these impromptu sessions after school, that was what led me down that path. And so we had, at that time, we had someone who was coming to our school from the district level, and he said, well, you know, you could do this for us at the district. And I said, well, that's kind of cool. I was at the time feeling very frustrated with the classroom. I was frustrated with all of the other things that I had to do, where I felt that it was pulling me away from actual teaching. And so there was a point in my career where I wasn't upset with or frustrated with actual teaching. I was frustrated with all the other things around teaching that kind of take us away from time with kids. And so I was at a point in my career where I said, you know what, maybe I'll just go, if I leave, I'll go, I can have more impact and more influence by teaching teachers. That was a great decision for me to make. I think it was one of the best decisions I ever made, but every day that I'm away from the classroom, I miss it more and more every day. My wife is a teacher. She teaches sixth grade, and so fortunately I have a little bit of a link, and now with a kindergartner in school, I have a little bit more of a link. I am lucky that a lot of the schools and the districts I work with, I do still get to go into classrooms, but I reflect a lot about the kind of teacher I was and how much better of a teacher I would be now, knowing what I know now. I think every teacher says that, and knowing what I know now, how much better of a teacher I would be, and all the access and all the things that we have available to us now. But there, it's I love being and doing what I get to do now, but I also miss the classroom every day. I miss being around kids and having the opportunity to actually see a lot of those things and a lot of those changes, that, especially in middle school. That, you know, I tell people all the time, middle school is hands down the best year. Elementary, great. Takes really special people to teach elementary school. High school, great. You know, you get to see them off to college, and that's wonderful. Middle school, they go through so many transformations in middle school, and especially when I looped with kids. So I would come in with sixth graders, and they would stay with me until they left to go to high school. And to see them transition over the course of 3 years is just simply amazing. It really is the best years, and I really do miss it. I'm lucky to do what I do now, but I miss it every day.
Well, now that you travel quite a bit and you work with different teachers and schools, have you always been comfortable speaking with adults in that capacity, or is that something that you had to get used to?
I wish my mama was here, because my mama would tell you that the only people, when I was growing up, I moved so much. My dad was in the military, and so I moved a lot, and so I never really had a good chance to stay in one place and make a whole lot of friends, and so I was always surrounded by adults, and I was always, whatever we were doing, I was always around adults. And so I've always felt very comfortable just, you know, being around adults and engaging and having this mentality that, you know, let's have a conversation. And so even from a very young age, it wasn't anything for me to, you know, to go into a room and try to captivate an audience of adults, even at 7 or 8 years old. Now I find it much more easier having been in front of a group of middle school. If you can teach a group of kids, no matter the age, if you can teach a group of 5-year-olds or 18-year-olds, then you have the ability to stand in front of a group of your peers. It's really no different. Teaching them is different, but being in front of them isn't a lot different. And I like being in front of people. I like being and presenting and sharing a lot of information. But I like stepping out and sitting out and sitting amongst, you know, people and hearing what other people have to say too. So having the opportunity to speak and to share is a large part of what I do and a large part of what I enjoy to do. And it's also something that I find very fun. It doesn't make me nervous or it's not nerve-wracking. I still get really excited when I'm getting ready to go speak. And that's a natural part of everything that everybody does. But it's just something that I enjoy to do and have the pleasure of doing more and more.
What are some of the most rewarding aspects of your current job?
being able to do things like this. So, you know, a lot of times people will they'll get hired on to do a keynote and they fly in that day, they speak, and then they leave. And a lot of folks in education, because they're one job to the next. And so to me, this is an opportunity for me to spend with other educators. And so when I get asked to come in or to speak or to present or something, you know, it makes my wife really mad because I'm gone for so many days. But for me, somebody asked me today, you know, why you're not speaking until Tuesday? Why are you here? Because I'm here for a very selfish reason, because I get to learn just like everybody else. I love going and coming to conferences. And you know, and just in the first part of the year, I'll hit about 12 conferences, and that's it's very, very selfish for me, but it's all learning for me. That those are the best parts of me being able to go out and to speak and to learn with others is a really great part of what I get to do. All the different types of people I get to meet and all the great things that I get to see, you know, there really are some incredible things that kids are doing no matter which what you hear negative about education, there are really some cool things that kids are doing. And just like here at this conference, they're rewarding and recognizing kids who are doing amazing. And I saw a first grader who was programming apps today. I mean, that's incredible. It's incredible stuff. And so it's just being able to see things like that and then share that with others is something that I really, really enjoy to do.
Well, when you were in the classroom, what was your favorite part about being a teacher?
Kids. And sometimes making other teachers mad. I had a really good knack for making other teachers angry. I came in as I started teaching my first year. I taught in an alternative school, and it was very, very challenging for me, but it was one of the best decisions that I ever made to teach in that environment, because it gave me a true respect for teaching as a whole and helped me understand who I was as a teacher. And at the end of the year, the principal who hired me got moved to a new school, and I was the only teacher she brought with me. So here I am walking into this environment with a new principal. I'm the only new teacher in the building, and I'm the teacher that the principal brought. So I was instantly considered, you know, principal's pet. And so people thought I could get away with more things, or I could do more things. And yeah, I leveraged that. I mean, I did things. I lived by the statement, ask and then beg for forgiveness. And so we would go out and do that. I would do that with my kids all the time. But I would regularly have teachers who were very angry with me. But I think a lot of it was they saw the great things that my kids were doing, not necessarily what I was doing, but how those kids would come to my classroom who would be, quote-unquote, behavior problems in other classrooms, and they would come to mine, and I wouldn't have a problem with them, and they want to know, what are you doing so different? Why aren't you focused on these things that I have to worry about standards, and I have to teach to a test, and this and that? Well, no, you don't. You don't have to do those things. Now, don't get me wrong. I tell anybody who I run into, I was a terrible teacher. I was the kind of teacher that I wouldn't want to have now, or that I try to get teachers to see, but there were elements that I saw that in myself that I try to train people into today about being more student-centered and allowing more collaboration. But again, if I had known what I know now about being a teacher, I would have been 10,000% better as a teacher, and I think all of us would have been that way.
Sure. How do you motivate those kids that are just unmotivated to be in school, especially in middle school? I'm a middle school 8th grade science teacher myself. So how do you motivate those kids that just aren't buying what you're selling?
It's definitely a challenge, especially with middle schoolers who think they know everything. So I have a sister who's 15, and she's a sophomore in high school, but she definitely thinks that the world revolves around her and that she knows everything. It's definitely a challenge, and I think part of it is that school's not designed for kids. A lot of schools aren't designed for kids. They're designed for teachers, and when it's really they should be designed for kids. So when my students came into my classroom, for the most part, they knew that they could decide the path they were going to take for their learning. And so there were times when they got to decide what they were going to do or learn that day. And as we learned how to do that together, and that was different for every group of kids, they more or less would come into my classroom and they would be intrinsically motivated. And we found that we tried to find the things that motivated them. So a lot of my kids were into sports. A lot of my kids were into wanting to play sports, and so I would try to bring that in. Or a lot of my kids were into music, so we would try to bring that in. Or more or less finding out what kids are motivated themselves about. Sure, it's not going to, if you ask a kid what they're going to be motivated about, it's not going to be school. That's okay that they're not motivated by school. They're going to be motivated by some other extrinsic factor. Utilize that. The classroom shouldn't be a comfortable place for teachers. It should be a comfortable place for learning for kids. And if your classroom is more comfortable for you, then you're doing it wrong. Your classroom should be a place where kids feel like they can express themselves and where they can be comfortable and where they can find those things that they can latch themselves onto, in addition to what you're trying to teach them. So you can teach, I could teach science through music, or I could teach math through sports, or I could teach, you know, language arts through science, whatever. It was understanding who my kids were and understanding each of them had a story and figuring out how can their story impact what they learn and how can I utilize that as a motivator.
So can you tell us a little bit about your journey into social media and kind of the foundation of the hashtag EdChat?
So I was I had left the classroom and was working in a very rural district in North Carolina at the time. It was 13 schools, but 90 minutes minutes from my office to the school that was furthest away. It's a very, very, very rural community. And I'd started a blog, and that my teachers, they wanted to know more regularly. They hadn't had anybody who was focused on technology in the district before. They were soaking it up. They had interactive whiteboards in their classroom. They had all kinds of technology, and they wanted to get as much as they could. Well, I was only one person for 13 schools, so I was trying as the best I could through my blog to share with them, but it wasn't fast enough for them. And I had been reading about Twitter, and I had actually been on Twitter before I had started the Web 20 Classroom account, and it wasn't. I didn't have a purpose to it. I followed random people. I didn't really. It wasn't. It really didn't work out, and so I deleted it. And I kept reading about how great, you know, a small groups of educators were finding that Twitter was. I started an account related to my blog, and I found a list of Twitter using educators who were doing the same job as me, and that was what the hook was. From there, it blossomed, and when I started seeing, you know, people, you know, taking my blog and retweeting it, or taking, you know, something that I said and sharing it with someone else, I saw the power that that had. And so I started writing about that, and I wrote about how that was affecting me as a professional. I wrote about how that was affecting my district and how that could have influence over my district, and it just blossomed and bloomed from there. And EdChat came about later on in 2009 with Tom Whippy and Shelley Terrell and I, where, you know, anybody who knows Tom Whippy knows that he is an instigator, and he is the kind of person who loves to push people's thinking, whether they like it or not. I mean, I call him the typical New Yorker because he is one, for a very good reason. But he is your kind of, he to me is the voice of reason in a lot of things, and a lot of people don't like what he has to say, but he pushes buttons. And so he was pushing people's buttons one day, and he was getting bombarded with a lot of questions and comments from a lot of places, and he couldn't keep track of them. And so he and I had had a couple of exchanges, and Shelley and I had had a couple of exchanges. And so the three of us kind of got together and said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I said, well, let's, you know, Shelley said, well, let's do a hashtag. And so we landed on we did some searches. There had been people using an EduChat hashtag. Well, let's do an EdChat hashtag, because that's really what we were doing, was just chatting. Let's do EdChat. And I said, well, you know, a lot of the chats, they just dictate what people that will talk about that week. I'm all about choice. Let's give them some choice. Let's see what people want to talk about, engage what people want to talk about. Let's do a poll. Let's come up with five responses. People can submit what they want to talk about, and we'll put it out there, and the community will vote. And that's what we've been doing for the past 5 years, and it's grown tremendously from there. It's like many several chats, it's award-winning. Twitter tells us to. It's the most widely used educational hashtag of all educational hashtags, which is really kind of incredible. I make no bones about that. We don't own EdChat. We don't, you know, we're the founders of it, but it doesn't belong to us. It belongs to everybody else who uses it, and everybody else who finds value in it. And that's where the joy of just watching people, just watching somebody tweet something on EdChat on that hashtag, and then see, you know, a couple minutes later, three or four responses to that person, is just that, to me, that's where the power of it is that it gives people a voice who otherwise, as they're starting out, don't have one. Where if you know, as you're starting out, and it's not about numbers, it's not about followers or following, but if you want an answer to a question and you've only got 10 people who are following you, you put it on that EdChat hashtag, and it reaches hundreds of thousands of other educators, and it instantly amplifies your voice. And that's what hashtags do, all hashtags. And so it really, that's where the power of it is being able to amplify your voice. And that's where I get the true gratification from.
What do you think one of the biggest challenges in education is right now? I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah, so somebody asked me that today at the conference, and I really think a lot of the problems we have right now stem from leadership. So my buddy Tom Murray says, you know, we have a leadership crisis in education today, and I wholeheartedly agree. And a lot of my work right now has been centered on administrators. I have a book coming out actually on Tuesday all about administrator professional development and administrator technology professional development. A lot of the problems that we have is either lack of leadership or lack of understanding of leadership, and or leadership understanding of where we need to go. And you know, we've got leaders like Todd who are doing amazing things in their buildings, who have opportunities, who just say, you know what, I'm going to do this because I know it's right for kids. The problem is we don't have enough leaders doing that. We either don't have enough leaders who will do it themselves or who will get out of the way of teachers who actually want to do that. So, I tweeted that today about how the role of the leader is more managerial, and it needs to get back to what it actually is, and that's the lead learner in a building. You know, like Joe Mazza said, you know, when he was in the classroom, when he was a principal, he said, you know, I'm the lead learner for my building. And it's true. I mean, the principal is the lead instructional leader for the building. And so if you don't have that mentality, if you have the mentality that all I do all half today is sit in my office or answer email or deal with parents or deal with discipline, then that's a managerial role, and that your school will not thrive in that environment. What we need is leadership who believes that, you know what, my kids are awesome, and I'm going to equip and empower my teachers and my students to be able to do awesome things. And that, I think, is what's truly going to change. Now, there are many, many other factors that go into that. There's over-reliance on data and our fascination with testing and all those things. But I really think it comes down to it really is a leadership crisis. It really is a need for leaders to understand, I know what's best for my kids, and I either need to empower myself as a leader to help my teachers get to that point if my teachers aren't there, or I need to get out of the way because I have teachers who do know that and empower them to help the other teachers in the building. But that doesn't mean that me as the principal doesn't need to understand what my teachers understand. And one of the things that really burned me up as a director of instructional technology was principals who were responsible for evaluating teachers' instructional and their instructional practice in the classroom. Specifically in North Carolina, we have a specific question about the teacher's effective use of technology, and that's judged by the principal. When I had principals who openly and honestly told me they didn't know how to log in the computer, they didn't know how to check their email, they freaked out whenever we changed email. That burns me up to no end. That's acceptable. And so trying to get principals to see that they also need to be at the same level of understanding as their teachers, not instructionally, but you need to know what effective use is. You need to know what effective use looks like and doesn't. And then how do you coach that teacher? Not only are you responsible for telling that teacher, yes, you know what you're doing is instructionally sound, but if you're not doing that, here's how I can help you be that. Because again, if you're the instructional leader in that building, your role is not just to say, yes, you're doing well, or no, you're not. It's yes, you're doing well, or no, you're not. And if you're not, here's how I'm going to help you. And if you are, here's how I'm going to help you grow. And so the only way we're going to, I think, fundamentally change a lot of what is wrong with education today is if we have a major change in how leadership is viewed in schools.
Well, I think it's such an important point that you make, that sometimes so many administrators forget that they have to continue their learning as well. Just because you made it to the role of administrator doesn't mean you have it all down and that you can stop learning. I mean, it's just like teachers, we have to be continually learning and bettering ourselves all the time.
Well, and it's like when my staff would go out and they would do professional development in a building, not only was it specifically targeted for that building, so they decided as a group and as a building, you know, what did they need, but the principal was also responsible for attending those sessions, and I made a big deal about principals who didn't attend sessions. And so, you know, you as a principal need to be at the same and have an understanding. If my staff was coming in and was teaching all about, you know, active board and active expressions, or how active expressions are used in the course of formative assessment, you don't attend that session, and now you're walking out into the classrooms after I'm gone or after my folks are gone, and you're not, and you're either seeing it and you don't understand what's happening, or you're not seeing it and you want to know why, and you don't have that basic understanding, that's a problem. I can't be there all the time to ensure that teachers are doing it effectively. And honestly, that's the role of the principal. The role of the principal is to look at teachers' teaching and to see, is it effective or is it not? And if it's not, how can I help them be better? If it is, how can I help them grow? And right. So it's really the only way to do that is that continued learning, is that continued professional development. It should be just as much an emphasis for leaders and administrators as it is for teachers.
What about one of the biggest things you've learned over the last year? How have you grown?
I've learned a lot about myself and a lot of the reflections that I do. I've learned I wasn't big on reflecting. When I started out as a teacher, I used to think that, especially when I was young and didn't know anything, that, and I'm still young and don't know much, but when I would do a lesson and if it would fail, I wouldn't either wouldn't talk about it or wouldn't share it or wouldn't try to figure out what went wrong. And what I've learned in the last couple years, especially through my blogging and through my writing and through the work and the conversations that I do, is that I'm going to fail a lot, and that's okay. That's how I get better. So, you know, take my presentations, for example. So I'll give a presentation, and it will be totally terrible, and I will call my wife, and she'll say, well, how did it go? And I was like, it was just utterly awful. Yeah, people will say really kind things, and they'll say it was really great, but I know it was not, I didn't put forth my best effort, or I didn't see something I should have seen, or whatnot. And so in the past, had I done that, I would have myself just not ever presented on that ever again, or would have taken the presentation and just scrapped it and started all over or done something completely different. Now I take a lot of opportunity, especially, you know, so at the end of conferences, at the end of presentations, at the end of writings, I reflect a lot. I'm usually on an airplane or I'm in a car or I'm somewhere where I have the opportunity just to think. And I think a lot about, you know, especially presentations. How well in my mind did I think I do? I'll never ever give a perfect one, but did I present that in a logical way? Did I do this in a way that made sense? And so a lot of times I will go back and I'll change things, or I'll do things differently, or I'll work at it. In the past, I wouldn't have done that, and now I have this belief in my mind that, you know what, it's okay that I did it wrong because I recognize that I did it wrong.
Right.
And I'm going to change it. And I think that's another piece of, what's wrong in Ed? Well, the whole failure thing. Well, you can't be a failure. Well, yes, you can. You just have to do it in the right way. So with me, it's that reflective piece that I've learned a lot about myself. I've always rushed through things, my mama would tell you, I've always pushed through and rushed and missed something important or done something like a bull in a china shop, and I can't, of a lot of the things I do, I can't do that. I have to be more methodical about what I do. So that reflective nature that I have now isn't perfect, but it helps me slow down and understand where I am and what I need to do.
So, Stephen, the one question we always like to end on with our guests is, what is something that you are really passionate about right now?
I'm really passionate about this leadership challenge that I think that we're undergoing. I've really been working a lot with ASCD and with a couple of my Corwin books, working on this understanding that the role of the leader has to change from that whole managerial to instructional leader, and helping leaders see that their position is very, very, very important in the role of the school, but that the way that they view, not only they view, but their districts view that role needs to change. Right. Yes, we need to look at data is very important. I think we have a terrible obsession with data, but I think that, you know, the overemphasis of holding principals' feet to the fire because their kids didn't do well as the kids down the street, I think is insane. I think that we need to go back to what is good teaching and learning, and how, if we're truly preparing kids for what we say are future college career ready, like college career ready, that's all we hear in North Carolina, if we're truly doing that, does it really matter what they got on their third grade math test? No. But if I equip them with skills that are going to suit them later on in life, like programming and critical thinking and collaboration, is that going to serve them better? And as an instructional leader, how can I remove that emphasis from from just that event to the skills and tools and resources necessary to make them true, you know, lifelong learners who are college and career ready. Right. That's where we need to shift our thinking. So I've been thinking a lot about the role of the leader and the role that technology plays in leadership, and how that role we can shift more into that, to being an instructional leader.
Well, Stephen, thanks so much for taking some time and spending this with on a Sunday evening. I know that you guys are busy and you're on the road and all that, so I appreciate you taking some time. So how can listeners connect with you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Web20Classroom. You can read my blog, web20classroom.org, or, you know, if you see me, just yank me aside and say hello. That works too.
So where's the 20 from? I always read it in my head as Web 2.0. But
it is. But sometimes when I would say 2.0, people would put like 2.0.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's from the title of my blog, but Web 20 Classroom, but my blog is called Blogging About the Web 2.0 Connected Classroom, which we're way past Web 2.0, so I probably should come up with a different title, but it is.
That's funny. Connect with us. You can find us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. You can also find us on the website, EduAllStars.com, and then searching out EduAllStars on iTunes, we'll pull up the previous 78 episodes that we have there to digest.
And you can join us for our next episode as we interview Mark Martin, a.k.a. the Urban Teacher out of the UK. So thanks again, Stephen, for coming on with us. We really appreciate you giving us some of your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen.